Chapter 13. John prodded the plastic balloon boy's head with his toe. It rolled a little farther, but did not speak again.
Charlie? Jessica said shakily. Where are they? The big ones?
I don't know. My head is still spinning. Charlie glanced around quickly, then drew closer to the others as they surveyed the room. Everything had changed when Clay shattered the fixtures. The realistic beasts and vicious-looking creatures were gone, replaced with strange, hairless versions of themselves. They no longer had eyes, only smooth, raised bumps of blank plastic.
They look like corpses, John said softly.
Or some kind of mold,
Clay said thoughtfully.
They don't look finished.
It's the lights, Charlie said. They were creating an illusion, like the chip.
What are you talking about? Jessica said.
What chip?
It's some kind of transmitter, embedded in a disk, Charlie said. It scrambles your brain, cluttering it with nonsense so that you see what you expect to see.
Then why don't they look like that?
Clay pointed to posters on the walls, depicting a very cheerful Freddy Fazbear with rosy cheeks and a warm smile.
Or that.
John had found another, depicting Bonnie jovially strumming a bright red guitar so shiny it looked like it was made from candy. Charlie looked thoughtful for a moment.
Because we didn't come here first.
She walked toward the posters.
If you were a little kid and you saw the cute commercials, then saw these posters and toys and all that stuff, then I think that's exactly what they would have looked like.
Because you already have those images in your head, John said.
He tore the Freddy poster off the wall and stared at it momentarily before letting it fall to the ground.
But we know better. We know they're monsters.
And we're afraid of them, Charlie said.
And so we're seeing them for exactly what they are, John concluded.
Clay went up to the arcade mascots again, his gun still drawn. He walked back and forth in front of the displays, looking at them from different angles.
How did you find me? Charlie asked suddenly. You showed up like the cavalry, just in time. How did you know I was here? How did you know any of this was here?
No one answered right away. John and Jessica looked to Clay, who was casting his eyes around the room purposefully. He looked like he was searching for something specific.
We followed, he trailed off.
Charlie looked at each of the three of them in turn.
Who?
She demanded. But just as she spoke, the closet door burst open, banging against the wall with a ringing clatter. The twisted Freddy who had taken Charlie came crashing out, his mouth still unhinged and swinging unnaturally. He was a nightmarish version of the Freddy they'd known as kids, with searing red eyes and the musculature of a monster. He turned his elongated head from side to side wildly, his jaw bouncing in place.
Run!
Clay yelled, waving his arms and trying to usher them together toward the door. Charlie was rooted to the ground, unable to take her eyes off the maw of the beast.
Wait! Jessica cried suddenly. Clay, these aren't possessed like the others. They're not the lost children.
What?
He said, momentarily stopping his frantic movement and looking thoroughly confused.
Shoot it!
Jessica screamed. Clay clenched his jaw, then raised the gun and aimed at Freddy's gaping mouth. He fired once. The shot was only a few feet from Charlie's ear, and it was deafening. Freddy jerked back, the python-like jaw contracting, and for a split second his image blurred and distorted. The unnaturally stretched mouth began to close, but before it could, Clay fired again, three more times in quick succession. With each shot, the creature seemed to glitch. It blurred, sputtering around the edges. Freddy's mouth curled in on itself, not quite closing, but shrinking inward, as the bear hunched forward around its wounds.
Clay fired one last time, aiming for Freddy's head. Finally, the animatronic toppled forward, a misshapen heap on the ground. Freddy's image flickered like static on a television screen. The color faded from his fur, then everything that made him Freddy winked out, leaving only a smooth plastic figure in his place. It looked like the rest of the animals in the room, a blank mannequin stripped of its characteristics. Charlie approached the thing that had been Freddy cautiously. The ringing in her ears was beginning to fade. She crouched down next to the creature, tilting her head to the side. "It's not like the other mascots from Freddy's," she said. "These aren't made of fur and fabric. They're made of us, by twisting our minds." The words came out with a revulsion she hadn't expected. "Charlie," John said softly. He stepped forward, but she ignored him. She touched the creature's smooth skin. It felt like something between plastic and human skin, a strange, malleable substance that was a little too soft, a little too slick. The feeling of it made her nauseous. Charlie leaned over the body, ignoring her disgust, and plunged her fingers into one of the bullet holes. She dug around in the slippery, inorganic stuff of the chest cavity, pretending not to hear Jessica and Clay's protests, and then she found it. Her fingers touched the disc, which was bent in half, almost broken. Charlie pried out a second piece of metal that was wedged beside it. She stood up and held it out to the others. A bullet rested in her palm. "You shot the chip," she said. "You killed the illusion." No one spoke. In the momentary quiet, Charlie was suddenly aware of the racket they had just made, in this place so accustomed to stillness. The silence was broken by a clicking sound, the noise of claws on tile. They all whirled to see, and from what had appeared to be a dark and empty corner, a wolf-like figure split away from the shadows and stalked toward them, upright but hunched forward, as if uncertain whether to walk as a beast or a human. They backed away as one. Charlie saw Clay about to trip on Freddy's collapsed body. She shouted, "Look out!" He stopped, turning to see, and his eyes widened at something behind Charlie. "There!" he cried, and fired a shot into the dark. They turned. An 8-foot, misshapen Bonnie, the rabbit counterpart to the creature on the floor, was blocking the doorway behind them. Its head was too large for its body, with eyes glowing white-hot in the dark. Its mouth was open, revealing several rows of gleaming teeth. Clay fired again, but the bullet had no effect. "How many bullets do you have left?" John said, measuring up the two threats still in the room. Clay fired off 3 more shots at Bonnie, then lowered the gun. 3, he said dryly. "I had 3. From the corner of her eye, Charlie saw John and Jessica draw closer together, moving a little behind Clay. She stayed where she was as the others retreated, transfixed by the two advancing figures, the wolf and the rabbit. She started to walk toward them. "Charlie," John said with a warning tone. "What are you doing? Come back." "Why did you bring me here?" Charlie asked, looking from one creature to the other. Her chest was tight and her eyes ached, like she'd been holding back tears for hours. "What do you want from me?" she shouted. They looked back at her with implacable plastic eyes. "What is this place? What do you know about my brother?" she screamed, her throat raw. She flung herself at the wolf, hurtling toward the gigantic beast, as if she could tear it apart with her bare hands. Someone caught her by the waist. Human hands lifted her up and pulled her back, and Clay spoke quietly into her ear. "Charlie, we need to go. Now." She pulled herself out of his grasp, but remained where she was. Her breath was unsteady. She wanted to scream until her lungs gave out. She wanted to close her eyes and sit very still and never emerge from the darkness. Instead, she looked again from Bonnie to the nameless wolf and asked, her voice so calm it chilled her to hear it, "Why do you want me?"
"They don't care about you. I'm the one that brought you here."
A voice spoke from the same shadowed corner the wolf had emerged from. The rabbit and the wolf straightened their posture, as if responding to the speaker's command.
"I know that voice," Jessica whispered.
A figure began to limp forward, obscured by darkness. No one moved. Charlie realized she was holding her breath, but she didn't hear anyone else breathing in the silence either, just the uneven shuffle of whatever was coming. Whatever it was the size of a man. Its body was contorted, sloping to one side as it lurched toward the group.
"You have something that belongs to me," said the voice,
and then the figure stepped into the light. Charlie gasped and heard John's sharp intake of breath.
"Impossible," Charlie whispered.
She felt John move up to stand beside her, but she didn't dare take her eyes off the man who stood before them. His face was dark, the color mottled, and it was swollen with fluid. Cheeks that had been hollow were now distended with a bloat of decay. His eyes were bloodshot, the burst capillaries threading through eyeballs that looked just a little too translucent. Something inside them had gone bad, jelly-like. At the base of his neck, Charlie could see two pieces of metal gleaming. They extended from within his neck, rectangular lumps standing out from his mottled skin. He wore what had once been a mascot suit of yellow fur, though what remained was now green with mold.
"Dave?"
Jessica breathed.
"Don't call me that," he snarled. "I haven't been Dave for a long time."
He held out his new hands, blood-soaked and forever sealed inside a rotting suit.
"William Afton, then, of Afton Robotics?"
"Wrong again," he hissed. "I've accepted the new life that you gave me. You've made me one with my creation. My name is Springtrap."
The man who had once been Dave cried the name with a hoarse glee, then scrunched his gnarled face back into a glare.
"I'm more than Afton ever was, and far more than Henry."
"Well, you smell terrible," Jessica quipped.
"Ever since Charlie remade me, set me free to my destiny, I've been master of all these creatures."
He crooked his fingers and made a sharp gesture forward. Bonnie and the wolf took two steps forward in unison.
"See? All the animatronics are linked together. It was a system designed to control the choreography for the shows. Now, I control the system. I control the choreography. All of this belongs to me."
Springtrap shuffled forward, and Charlie shrank back.
"I owe you both another debt of gratitude as well," he said. "I was imprisoned in that tomb beneath the stage, scarcely able to move, only able to see through the eyes of my creatures."
He gestured at the two who stood behind him.
"But for all that I could see, I was trapped. Eventually, they would have broken me out, but having you do it yourself was a delightful surprise."
He met Charlie's eyes, and a muscle twitched in her cheek.
"Get away from me. Don't come any closer."
As if reading her thoughts, he sidled nearer to her. She would have felt his breath on her face, if he still breathed. Springtrap raised a bent hand. The fabric suit was ragged, revealing his human skin through the gaps. She could see the places where metal pins and rods had buried themselves alongside his bones and tendons, into a rusted shadow skeleton. He touched the back of his hand to Charlie's face, stroking her cheek like a beloved child. From the corner of her eye, she saw John start forward.
No, it's okay, she forced herself to say.
I won't hurt your friends, but I need something from you.
You have to be kidding, she said, her voice brittle.
His mouth twisted into something that grotesquely resembled a smile. John heard a faint click and turned just in time to see Clay loading one bullet quietly into his gun. Clay shrugged.
You never know when a corpse may wander out of the shadows wearing a rabbit suit.
He raised his arm, steadied himself, and fired. Springtrap recoiled.
Kids! Clay shouted. The door!
Charlie jerked her eyes away from Springtrap almost painfully, as if he had been exerting some hypnotic force on her. Bonnie had abandoned the exit, leaving it clear. Clay, John, and Jessica began to run. Charlie glanced back, reluctant to go, then joined the others. They ran back the way they'd come from, Clay leading the way as they wound through the carnival games and looming, featureless mascots. He strode purposefully ahead, as if he knew the way. Charlie remembered her question that no one had answered. How did you find me? They were chased by sounds, scraping metal and the clack of the wolf's claws. In the open space, the noises echoed strangely, seeming to come from every side. It was as if an army pursued them. Charlie quickened her step. She glanced up at John, seeking reassurance, but his eyes were on Clay ahead of them. They reached the room with the waterfall, and again Clay knew the path. He headed directly for the passage beneath the cliff, where the water emerged. They pressed through it one by one. Clay and John were too tall to walk through without bending over, and Charlie felt a quick pang of relief. The monsters won't fit. Halfway through the passage, Clay paused, standing motionless in an awkward position. He craned his neck, studying something just out of view.
Clay, Charlie hissed.
I have an idea, he said.
Two shadows emerged from the far side of the room. Jessica glanced at the black-lit tunnel beside them, ready to run for it. But Clay shook his head. Instead, he guided the group backward, none of them taking their eyes off the monsters. All that shielded them now was the river that bisected the room. The animatronics were approaching the water hesitantly. The wolf sniffed at it and shook his fur, and Bonnie simply bent down and stared.
Don't run, Clay said sternly.
They can't cross that thing, right? Charlie said.
As if responding to her cue, the two mascots stepped unsteadily into the river. Jessica gasped, and Charlie took an involuntary step back. Slowly and deliberately, the animatronics continued toward them through the waist-high water. The wolf slipped on the smooth bottom and fell. It dunked completely under the water for a moment, before scrambling to the side, thrashing violently. Bonnie lost his footing as well, but managed to grab the riverbank and steady himself, then continued forward.
That's not possible, Charlie said.
Behind her came a peal of laughter, and she whirled around. It was Springtrap, his eyes scarcely visible, peering through the black-lit tunnel nearby.
Was that your plan? He said incredulously. Did you think my robots would be as poorly designed as your father's? Well then, I'm sure you made them fireproof as well, Clay called out.
His voice reverberated in the cavernous, empty room. Springtrap frowned, puzzled, then looked at the water in the stream. It was glistening in the dim light, color dancing on its surface in gleaming swirls, like gasoline. Charlie turned to face Springtrap. Open gas cans lined the walls, some lying on their sides. All were empty. Clay flicked a lighter and flung it into the water.
The top of the river caught fire, a flame billowing up like a tidal wave, obscuring the animatronics in the middle. The creatures struggled to the side of the river, emitting guttural, high-pitched shrieks. They managed to crawl onto the bank, but it was too late. Their illusions deactivated. Their plastic skin was exposed, liquefying and falling from their bodies into little flaming pools on the floor. Charlie and the others watched as the dissolving creatures fell, writhing in agonized screams. They all stood frozen, mesmerized by the gruesome spectacle. Then, from behind her, Charlie heard a quiet scraping sound. She whirled around to see Springtrap vanish into the mouth of the narrow, black-lit cave. She took off after him, running into the eerie light.
"Charlie!" Clay called.
He began to chase her, but the flaming creatures had crawled across the floor, perhaps trying to reach their master, perhaps in mindless desperation, and now they blocked the mouth of the cave with their blazing remains. Charlie set her eyes on the path ahead. She couldn't afford to look back. The passage was narrow, and it smelled damp and ancient. The floor felt like rock beneath her bare feet, but though it was uneven, it wasn't painful. The surface was worn and smooth. As soon as the dark of the cave closed over her, she felt a spark from her dreams, the tug of something so like her that it was her, blood calling to blood.
"Sammy?" she whispered.
His name glanced off the cave walls, shrouding her in the sound of it. The absence inside her pulled her forward, drawing her toward the promise of completion.
"It has to be you."
Charlie ran faster, following a call that came from deep inside her. She could hear the distant echo of Springtrap's laughter at intervals, but she couldn't spot him ahead of her. Occasionally, she thought she caught glimpses of him, but he was always gone before her eyes had time to focus in the disorienting glow of the black light. The cave twisted and turned until she had no idea which direction she was headed, but she ran on. Charlie blinked as something moved at the corner of her eye, just out of sight. She shook her head and ran on, but then it happened again. An unnatural shape, neon bright, slithered out of the wall and wriggled past her. Charlie stopped, clapping a hand over her mouth so she wouldn't scream. The thing undulated up the wall, moving like an eel, though it was climbing rock. When it reached the ceiling, it vanished, but she couldn't see a break in the rock where it might have gone.
"Just keep going."
She started to run again, but suddenly more of them poured out of the seam at the base of the wall. Dozens of wriggling shapes swam and danced, moving along the floor of the cave like it was the floor of the sea. Three of them headed right for Charlie. They rippled over her feet and she screamed, then realized as they circled her, nibbling curiously at her toes, that she felt nothing.
"You aren't real," she said.
She kicked at them, and her foot passed straight through empty air. The creatures had vanished. Charlie gritted her teeth and ran onward. Ahead of her, large glowing creatures like dancers made of mist appeared and vanished one after another. They dashed across the passage, as if they were running along a path that just happened to intersect with this one. When Charlie was almost close enough to touch them, the one nearest sputtered and faded out. She ran on, listening for the sound of Springtrap's maniacal giggle, hoping that it was enough to guide her. She turned a corner, then the passage angled sharply the other way. Charlie ran straight into the wall, catching herself with her hands at the last second. She spun around, looking for the way forward. The jolt had been enough to distract her. She couldn't tell which way she had come from. Charlie took a deep breath and closed her eyes. She could hear a soft voice in the air. "Left." She started running again. A burst of blue light nearly blinded her as a massive shape rose in the darkness. Charlie screamed, flinging herself back against the wall of the cave
and throwing her arms up to shield her face. The thing before her was a gaping mouth full of teeth, all glowing blue. The enormous maw bore down over her.
"It's an illusion," Charlie whispered.
She ducked and tried to roll away in the narrow space. Her shoulder struck a rock and her arm went numb. Charlie clutched it instinctively and looked up. Nothing was there. She pressed her back against the wall of the cave, taking deep breaths as feeling slowly returned to her arm.
"It's another transmitter," she said quietly. "Nothing I see here is real."
Her voice was thin in the rocky passage, but saying the words aloud was enough to make her stand again. She closed her eyes. The connection she had felt was growing stronger as she ran, the sense that she was running toward a missing piece of herself. It was unbearable, stronger than the urge to fight or flee from danger. It was greater than hunger, deeper than thirst, and it pulled at the core of her being. She could no more turn back than she could choose to stop breathing. She set off again, hurtling farther into the cavern. Far in the distance, Springtrap's laughter still echoed.
"Charlie?"
John called again, but it was hopeless. She was long out of sight, deep into the cave, and what remained of Bonnie and the wolf still burned in front of the opening.
"We have to go," Clay shouted. "We can find another way."
Jessica grabbed John's arm and he gave in, following Clay toward the arcade entrance. Just as they reached the door, the twisted Freddy lunged out of the shadows, almost falling to the ground. Jessica screamed and John froze, struck still at the sight of him. His illusion sputtered on and off in pieces. An arm flickered away, exposing the smooth plastic underneath. Then the fur returned and his torso went blank, revealing the gunshot holes and the ugly, twisted metal beneath the plastic shell. Worse was the face. Not only was the illusion missing, but the material underneath. From his chin to his forehead, the left half of Freddy's face had been ripped away, revealing metal plates and gnarled wires. His left eye glowed red amid the exposed machinery, while his right eye was completely dark. A noise behind them broke John from his horrified reverie. He looked back to see that Bonnie and the wolf had gotten to their feet, still smoldering. Their plastic casings had almost entirely melted away, still dribbling slowly off their bodies, but the robotic works beneath seemed intact. They approached steadily, moving into position, so that John, Clay, and Jessica were surrounded.
"Do you have any bullets left?"
John asked Clay in a low voice. Clay slowly shook his head. He was turning in a cautious circle, shifting his gaze from one animatronic to the next, as if trying to gauge which would make the first strike. Charlie ran steadily on, keeping her eyes on the path. She turned another corner and blinked. Something was glowing blue ahead of her.
"It's not real," she told herself.
She paused for a moment, but the glowing shapes didn't move. She kept going, realizing as she drew closer that the passageway was widening, opening out finally into a small alcove where the blue glow became clear. The floor was spotted with patches of mushrooms, their caps glowing an intense neon blue under the black light. She slowed her pace, went to the nearest grouping, and bent to touch the mushrooms. She snapped her hand back in surprise when she felt a spongy substance.
"They're real, sort of," she said.
"Yes,"
said a voice beside her ear, and then she was choking. Springtrap grabbed her by the neck, crushing her windpipe. Charlie only panicked for a moment before anger returned to her, giving her clarity. She reached her arm out forward as far as she could, then jammed it back, striking her elbow into his solar plexus with as much force as she could muster. His hands dropped from her throat, and she leaped free, turning to face him as he clutched his injured gut. Things have changed since you died, Charlie said, surprised by the calm disdain in her voice. For one thing, I've been doing sit-ups.
I think this is it, Jessica said quietly, spinning in place as the three monsters approached, leaving no avenue of retreat.
John felt his chest clench, his body protesting the idea. But she was right. He put a hand on her shoulder.
Maybe we can play dead, he said.
I don't think we'll have to play, Jessica said resignedly.
Backs together,
Clay barked, and they backed up into a tiny triangle, each facing one of the creatures. The wolf was crouched, ready to spring. John met its eyes. They were sputtering in and out, dark and malevolent, then completely blank. The thing drew back, and John steeled himself. Jessica grabbed his hand, and he clenched hers tightly. The wolf leaped, and then fell to the ground screeching as something knocked it viciously on its face. The figure, invisible in the shadows, grabbed the wolf's feet and yanked it backward, dragging it away from its human prey as it howled, scrabbling at the floor with its claws. It kicked its hind legs, freeing itself, and began its attack again. Jessica screamed, and John shouted with her, then watched, breathless, as the wolf was caught by its feet again. The thing that held it flipped it onto its back and jumped on top of it. The new predator paused for an instant, meeting their eyes with a silver glow, and Jessica gasped.
Foxy, John breathed.
As if spurred on by hearing his name, Foxy plunged his hook into the wolf's chest and began to tear at its exposed machinery. The screeches of metal ripping apart metal ground at their ears. Foxy continued to dig furiously, burrowing into the wolf as wires and parts fell from the sky. He snapped his jaws in the air, then tore at the wolf's stomach, wrenching out its insides and flinging them aside with a brutal efficiency. The wolf was overpowered, its limbs flailing helplessly before falling heavily to the ground. Behind them came another inhuman scream. John whipped around in time to see the fire-ravaged Bonnie on its stomach, being dragged steadily into the shadows. Its eyes blinked on and off in a panicked, meaningless pattern. It screamed again as, with a horrible grinding sound, it was torn to pieces by whatever lurked in the shadows. Pieces of metal and shredded plastic scattered across the floor, skittering out in front of the prone rabbit, so that it could see the remnants of its own lower half. It screamed again, anchoring its claws into the tile in a last, futile defense, only to be pulled screeching into the dark as though through a grinder. In the shadows, four lights glowed. John blinked, realizing they were eyes. He nudged Jessica.
I can see them, he whispered. Chica and Bonnie, our Chica and Bonnie.
Beside the river, Foxy had torn the wolf's limbs from its body. He leaped from the ravaged torso and took an attack posture toward the large, twisted Freddy, which twitched and flickered for a moment, then lowered its massive head and charged. Foxy leaped, hitting the twisted Freddy's face with full force and knocking it onto its back, then tearing into its head cavity, slashing at what was left of the twisted face with enthusiasm. Something grabbed John and he snapped out of his trance. The twisted Bonnie grabbed him with an arm of exposed metal, but the eyes in the dark rose suddenly behind it. The original Bonnie grabbed the torso of the twisted Bonnie and threw it aside to where Chica waited. She grabbed the misshapen rabbit's head and wrenched it off in a burst of sparks. John shielded his eyes. When the smoke settled, all that remained was the hollow, burnt corpse of an unidentifiable monster. Bonnie and Chica had vanished into the shadows. Charlie ran for the mouth of the passage, but Springtrap leaped on her with preternatural speed. He knocked her to the ground and reached again for her neck with his swollen hands. Charlie rolled out of the way, and something jabbed her hard in the back. She snatched at it, and a mushroom cap came away in her hands. She leaped to her knees as Springtrap got to his feet, circling her, looking for an opening. She glanced down. A sturdy metal spike had held the mushroom cap in place. She wrapped her hand around its base, blocking it from Springtrap's sight with her body. Charlie looked up at him, meeting his gelatinous eyes, silently daring him to attack. As if on cue, he sprang at her, leaping with his arms thrust out, stretching again toward her throat. At the last moment, Charlie ducked her head and thrust the spike upward with all her might. It stopped with a jolt as it hit his chest, but she drove it in, ignoring his sputtering cries as he tried uselessly to beat her away. She stood, her hands shaking as she shoved the stake in as far as it would go. He toppled backward, and she knelt swiftly beside him, giving the metal spike another thrust. "Tell me why," she hissed. It was the question that consumed her, the thing that kept coming back in her nightmares. Now he said nothing, and she rocked the stake back and forth in his chest. He made a gagging cry of pain. "Tell me why you took him. Why did you choose him? Why did you take Sammy?" "Into the cave," John shouted. "We have to get Charlie." They hurried to the opening, but from inside the cave came a strange, overwhelming clatter. They all stepped back as a horde of the balloon boys emerged from the cave, shaking back and forth on unsteady feet, their pointed teeth chattering loudly as they wobbled forward with staring eyes.
"Not again! I hate these things!" Jessica cried.
Clay took up a fighting stance, but John could see they would be overwhelmed. There was something different about the children now, something coordinated. Though they shook and wobbled, it no longer seemed like a sign of weakness. Instead, John thought of warriors rattling their shields, the threat before the battle.
"We have to get away," he said. "Clay!"
Something shook the earth, pounding even footsteps, as a shadow loomed above them. John looked up and saw a smiling Freddy Fazbear approaching, his hat at a jaunty angle and his massive limbs swinging.
"Oh no, he's back!" Jessica screeched.
"No, wait, that's our Freddy."
John grabbed Jessica and shielded her with his arms. Freddy lumbered past them and into the crowd of balloon boys. With a single lunge, he smashed both arms into the crowd, creating a deafening shatter of metal and plastic. The air was filled with arms, legs, and broken shrapnel. Freddy got to his feet and grabbed one of the balloon boys, lifting it up like it weighed nothing. He crushed its head with one hand. Freddy tossed the body to the ground and stomped on it, pursuing the others as they ran. They scattered, but Freddy was moving swiftly, and the room resounded with the noise of cracking plastic.
"Come on, into the cave!"
Clay yelled over the din, and they ran for the passage. They hurried down the narrow path, Clay at the front, and John taking up the rear, glancing behind to make sure they weren't being followed. Suddenly, Clay halted, and Jessica and John nearly ran into him. Crowding up beside him, they saw why he'd stopped. The path split, and there was no trace of Charlie.
"There," Jessica said suddenly. "There's a light."
John blinked. It was dim, but he saw it. Somewhere down the passage, there was a blue glow, though it was impossible to tell how far away it was.
"Come on," he said grimly, pressing past Clay to take the lead.
"Why did you take Sammy?"
Charlie cried again. Springtrap wheezed and smiled but did not speak. She grabbed his head with both hands, desperate with fury. She lifted his head and brought it crashing against the rock where it lay. He made another sharp grunt of pain, and she did it again. This time something began to ooze from the back of his head, running thickly down the rock.
What did you do to him? Charlie demanded. Why did you take him? Why did you choose him?
He looked up at her. One of his pupils had swallowed the iris of his eye. He smiled vaguely.
I didn't choose him.
Hands grabbed Charlie's shoulders, dragging her up and away from the semi-conscious spring trap. She shouted and turned to fight back, only stopping herself when she saw that it was Clay. The others were behind him. She turned back, shaking with rage.
I'll kill you, she cried.
She lifted Springtrap up by the shoulders and shoved him back against the rock. His head bounced and lulled to the side.
What do you mean you didn't choose him? Charlie said, leaning in close to him,
as if she might read the answers in his battered face.
You took him from me. Why did you take him?
Springtrap's mismatched eyes seemed to focus for a moment, and even he seemed to have difficulty muttering his next words.
I didn't take him. I took you.
Charlie stared, her fingers going lax, loosening on Springtrap's moldy suit.
What?
The rage that had filled her to the breaking point drained away all at once. She felt like she'd lost too much blood and was going into shock. Springtrap didn't try to get away. He just lay there coughing and sputtering, his eyes once more unfocused, staring into a void Charlie couldn't see. Suddenly the floor rattled beneath them. The walls rocked inward as the whole cave shook, and something mechanical roared on the other side of the wall. The sounds of grinding metal filled the air.
It's a battle royale out there, Clay shouted. This whole place is coming down.
Charlie glanced at him, and as soon as her head was turned, she felt Springtrap slip from her fingers. She whipped back around, just in time to see him roll through an open trap door at the base of an enormous rock a few feet away. Charlie leaped up to follow him, but the floor quaked violently. She lost her footing, nearly falling as half the cave wall came tumbling down. She stopped, glancing around in confusion. Real rock and dirt cascaded all around them.
It's not the fake cave that's collapsing, she shouted to the rest. It's the whole building.
Is everyone okay?
Clay shouted. Charlie nodded and saw that John and Jessica were still on their feet.
We have to go.
Light shone through a crack in the wall ahead. Clay started for it, motioning the others to follow. Charlie hesitated, unable to take her eyes from the last place she'd seen Springtrap. John put a hand on her arm. The walls of the fake cavern had almost completely fallen, and now they could see the actual interior of the complex.
That way,
Clay shouted, pointing to a narrow maintenance hall that seemed to stretch off endlessly into the distance.
None of these things will be able to fit through there.
Clay and Jessica ran for the entrance to the corridor, but Charlie faltered.
Charlie, we can deal with him another day,
John shouted over the din.
But we need to survive this one first.
The ground shook again, and John looked at Charlie. She nodded, and they ran. Clay led them racing through the tunnel as the sound of its collapse chased them. The air was filled with dust, obscuring the path ahead. Charlie looked back once, but the ruins were lost in the haze. Eventually, the rumble of falling rock was reduced to a distant thunder. The clean, narrow hallway began to feel removed from the madness behind them.
Clay, we have to stop,
Jessica cried, holding her side like she was in pain.
I see something up ahead. I think we're almost to the end of this. There.
The hallway ended in a heavy metal door, partially cracked, and Clay beckoned John to help him open it. It squealed and protested, then gave way at last, opening into a simple room of dark stone. One wall of it had been knocked down, and the room gaped open, the cool night air pouring in. John looked at Charlie.
"We're out. We're okay,"
he laughed.
"Don't you see where we are?"
she whispered. Slowly, she walked the length of the room, gesturing to the four enormous pits in the floor, one of which contained a headless, half-buried robot.
"John, this is my dad's house. It's the room we found."
"Come on, Jessica."
Clay was helping Jessica through the gap in the collapsed wall. He paused and looked back to John.
"It's okay," John said. "We'll be right there."
Clay nodded. He helped Jessica through and moved out of sight.
"What is this?"
Charlie put her hand on her stomach, a sudden unease settling over her.
"What's wrong?"
John asked. Something flickered all around them, a disorienting flash, too fast to even tell where it had come from. A thunderous crash echoed from the hall they'd just broken out of.
"Charlie, I think we should go with Clay."
"Yeah, I'm coming."
Charlie followed John to the gap in the wall as he climbed through it.
"Okay, come on,"
John shouted, holding out his hand to her from what had once been her own backyard. She started forward, then stopped as the lights flickered again.
"What is that?"
It was the walls. The whitewashed concrete was blinking in and out of existence, shivering like a dying bulb. It was the wall Charlie had been drawn to the first time they came to this place. Now she felt its pull as she had in the cave. It was stronger here than it had ever been, even in the dreams that left her drained and aching.
"I'm here."
She took a step toward the far wall and felt another pang in her stomach.
"Here? Yes, here."
"Charlie,"
John cried again.
"Come on."
"I have to," she said softly.
She went to the wall and put her hands on it, as she'd done before. But this time the concrete was warm, and somehow smooth despite the rough finish.
"I have to get inside."
For a moment, she felt like she was in two places at once. Here, inside the little room, and on the other side of the wall, desperate to get through. She drew back suddenly, taking her hands off the wall as if it burned. The illusion flickered, then died altogether. The concrete wall was made of metal, and at the center was a door. Charlie stared, blank with shock.
This is the door.
She'd been drawing it without knowing what it was, approximating over and over something she had never seen. She stepped forward again and put her hands on the surface. It was still warm. She pressed her cheek against it.
"Are you in there?"
she called softly.
"I have to get you out."
Her heart was pounding, blood rushing in her ears so loudly she could scarcely hear anything else.
"Charlie! Charlie!"
John and Jessica were both calling her from outside, but their voices seemed as distant as memory. She stood, not taking her hands from the metal, but tracing her fingers along it. It felt like letting go for even an instant would cause her pain. She brought her hands to the crack in the wall. It had no handle, no knob, and no hinges. It was just an outline, and now she ran her thumb up and down the side of it, trying to find a trip, some trick that would make the door open and let her through. She heard John climb back inside and slowly approach her, keeping his distance, as though he might scare her away.
"Charlie, if you don't get out of here, you'll die. Whatever's behind that door, it can't give you back your family. You still have us."
Charlie looked at John. His eyes were wide and frightened. She took a small step toward him.
"We've lost enough. Please, don't make me lose you, too,"
John pleaded.
Charlie stared at the ceiling as it trembled. Clouds of smoke were pouring out of the corridor they'd come from. John coughed heavily. He was choking. She looked at him. He was terrified, unwilling to draw closer than he already was. She turned again, and the world around her faded. She couldn't hear John behind her, or smell the smoke filling the air. She laid her hand flat against the wall. A heartbeat. I feel a heartbeat. Though she made no intentional movement, her body turned to the side. She tensed, committing to remain where she stood, without ever making the decision. Something began to hiss, the steady, gentle sound of air being released. From the base of the door came a rhythmic clicking. Charlie closed her eyes.
Charlie!
John grabbed her and turned her forcefully toward him, shaking her out of her stupor.
Look at me. I'm not leaving you here.
I have to stay.
No, you have to come with us, he cried. You have to come with me.
No,
Charlie felt her voice trail off. She was losing strength.
I love you, John said.
Charlie's eyes stopped drifting. She fixed them on him.
I'm taking you with me, right now.
He grabbed her hand roughly. He was strong enough to pull her away by force, she knew, but he was waiting for her to acknowledge him. She looked into his eyes, trying to let them bring her back. It felt like trying to awaken from a dream. John's gaze was an anchor, and she held it, letting him keep her steady, draw her back to him.
Okay, she said quietly.
Okay,
John repeated, heaving the words out in a sigh. He'd been holding his breath. He walked backward, guiding her as he went. She climbed to the top of the broken wall and paused, bracing herself against the insistent pull of the door and what lay behind it. She took a deep breath, then was torn backward by a colossal force. She ripped back through the rocks, her arms pinned to her sides. Charlie screamed, struggling to get away. Dimly, she heard John shouting close by. As she whipped her body back and forth against its grip, Charlie glimpsed the immense thing that had caught her. The twisted Freddy stared blankly forward, or at least what remained of it. It held her with one arm. The other was gone, and wires hung from its shoulder like extra bits of sinew. Its plastic casing had melted away, and what remained were metal plates and stays, a skeleton with unnatural bulges and gaps in its frame where the collapse had mangled it. Its face was a gaping hole, spilling teeth and wire that hung in shapeless masses. Charlie couldn't see its legs, and after a second she realized they were gone. It had dragged itself, one-armed, through the rubble. Wires spilled out of its body like guts, and when she saw its stomach, Charlie went cold with terror. Its chest had parted at the middle. Sharp, uneven teeth lined both sides. Charlie kicked at the animatronic, but it did no good. It forced her instantly into the chasm. The thing embraced her, pushing her deeper inside its chest as they toppled backward together. The metal ribcage snapped shut. She was caught.
Charlie!
John was kneeling beside her, and she reached out through the metal stays. He grabbed her hand.
Clay!
He shouted.
Jessica!
Jessica was there in seconds. Charlie could see Clay struggling back through the narrow opening.
Wait!
Charlie cried as Jessica tried to pry the chest open.
The spring locks. They'll kill me if you touch the wrong thing. But if we don't get you out, you'll die anyway,
Jessica shouted. Charlie saw for the first time that the mouth wasn't finished closing. It was layered somehow, and metal plates began folding over her like petals of a horrid flower. John started to stand, but Charlie tightened her hand around his.
Don't let go of me,
she cried, panicked. He dropped back to his knees and pulled her hand to his chest. She stared at him, even as the metal plates closed over her, threatening to seal her off. Jessica tried to jam them delicately, without setting off the spring locks.
John,
Charlie gasped.
Don't,
he said roughly.
I've got you.
The plates continued to slide down and meet in the center. Charlie's arm was trapped in the corner of the strange mouth, protruding from the only gap where the plates didn't meet. She looked around wildly. Another layer was closing. She was wedged into the suit haphazardly, her whole body crammed into Freddy's torso, and she could see nothing but dimming figures as more layers of metal and plastic closed over her. Above her, Jessica was trying to stop the next layer from emerging, and she felt Freddy's mutilated body lurch.
Jessica, look out!
She screamed at the top of her lungs. Jessica leaped back just in time to avoid Freddy's violently swinging arm. The animatronic was on its back, but it struck out randomly, beating Jessica and Clay away. Its body rocked back and forth, and Charlie eyed the springs and robotic parts all around her. She drew her knees up to her chest, trying to make herself smaller. John let go of her hand, and she grabbed at his absence. She could no longer see outside.
John!
Freddy's body shook, struck by a massive blow.
Let go of her!
John screamed. Clay hefted a metal beam from the ground and struck at Freddy's head. The twisted bear tried to strike with its remaining arm. Clay ducked out of the way and hit it again from the other side, out of reach. Jessica was still at the creature's chest, trying to find an opening to pry at, but each layer melded seamlessly together. There was nothing to catch at. John moved in next to her, trying to help. Clay struck at the head over and over, making Freddy's whole body jolt with every blow.
I can't get to her,
Jessica yelled.
She's going to suffocate.
She tried to steady Charlie's trembling hand. Clay hit Freddy's head once more with a resounding crash, and they heard metal cracking as the head was knocked off the creature's body.
Can we get her out through the neck?
John asked urgently. Freddy's arm continued to flail, but it had weakened and was just rising and falling, seeming to swing without purpose.
Clay, help!
Jessica cried. He ran to take over, digging his fingers between the plates to pry them open. Jessica continued holding Charlie's hand, which had gone limp.
Charlie!
Jessica cried. Charlie's hand closed over hers again, and Jessica gasped with relief.
John, Clay, she's okay. Hurry. Charlie, can you hear me? It's Jessica.
There was no sound from inside Freddy's sealed chest, but Charlie held on tightly to Jessica's hand as the others grimly worked to free her. Suddenly, a single high-pitched click reverberated through the air. John and Clay froze, their hands still hovering above Freddy's chest. For a moment, the air stood still. Then the metal body convulsed violently. It launched itself off the ground, and a ghastly crunch of metal pierced the air. All three pulled back instinctively. Clay and John jumped away from the thing, and Jessica scrambled backward, dropping Charlie's hand. The suit fell again and was still. The arm was splayed on the ground at an awkward angle. The room was silent.
Charlie?
John said softly. Then his face went white. He ran to the place where her arm was exposed, falling hard on his knees, and grabbed her hand in both his own. It was limp. John turned it over and tapped her palm with his fingers.
Charlie? Charlie!
John,
Jessica said very quietly.
The blood.
He looked up at her, confused, still holding on to Charlie. Then something wet dripped onto his hand.
There was blood running out of the suit and down Charlie's arm. Her skin was slick and red, except the hand he held. He watched, unable to look away, as it dripped steadily from the suit, pooling on the ground and beginning to seep into his jeans. It covered his hand and hers until his skin was slippery and he began to lose his grip. She was sliding away from him. Sirens were suddenly nearby, and John realized vaguely that he'd been hearing them in the distance. He looked dazedly up at Clay.
"I radioed them," he said. "We aren't safe in here."
Clay took his eyes off the suit and looked up to study the ceiling. It was bowed and cracking, on the verge of collapse. John didn't move. People were shouting outside, and flashlights bobbed up and down as they ran toward the crumbling building. Jessica touched his shoulder. Breaks and cracks resounded through the space.
"John, we have to."
As if to mark her point, the floor shook again beneath them and something crashed loudly not far away. Charlie's hand didn't move. A uniformed officer pressed through the crack in the wall.
"Chief Burke? Thompson, we have to get the kids out, now."
Thompson nodded and motioned to Jessica.
"Come on, miss."
"John, come on,"
Jessica managed to say, and a thunderous clatter sounded from behind them. Clay looked to the officer again.
"Get them out of here."
Thompson took hold of Jessica's arm and she tried to shove him away.
"Don't touch me,"
she shouted, but the officer firmly pulled her up and over the rubble, half dragging her outside. John only half heard the commotion. Then someone's hands were on his shoulders as well. He batted them away, not looking around.
"We're leaving," Clay said in a low voice. "Not without Charlie," John responded.
Clay took a deep breath. John saw him signal someone from the corner of his eye. Then he was grabbed forcefully by two large men and dragged toward the opening.
"No," he shouted. "Let me go."
They shoved him roughly over the broken wall. Then Clay struggled out behind them.
"Is everyone out?" a female officer called.
"Yes,"
Clay said hesitantly, but with the ring of authority.
"No,"
John shouted. He broke free of the officers holding him back and ran for the opening again. He had one foot through the gap, then stopped dead as a sweeping flashlight briefly illuminated the room in front of him. A dark-haired woman knelt in the pool of blood, holding Charlie's limp hand. She looked up sharply and met his eyes with a piercing black gaze. Before John could move or speak, hands grabbed his shoulders again and drew him back, and then the whole house collapsed before them. Chapter 14.
"We don't know for sure," Jessica said, firmly setting down the fork she'd been playing with on the diner table. It made a disappointing click.
"Don't do this," John warned.
He didn't look up from the menu, though he hadn't read a word since he picked it up.
"It's just, all that we saw was, you know, blood. People can survive a lot of things. Dave, Springtrap, whatever he wants to call himself, he survived one of those suits, twice. For all we know, she might be trapped in the rubble. We should go back. We could..."
"Jessica, stop."
John closed the menu and put it down on the table.
"Please, I can't listen to this. We both saw it happen. We both know she couldn't have..."
Jessica opened her mouth again, about to interrupt.
"I said, stop. Don't you think that I want to believe that she's okay? I cared about her too. I cared about her a lot. There is nothing I want more than for her to somehow have escaped. For her to drive up in that ancient car and get out all furious and say, 'Hey, why'd you leave me behind?' But we saw the blood. There was too much. I held her hand, and it didn't feel like anything. As soon as I touched her, I just... Jessica, I knew. And you know it too.
Jessica picked up her fork again and twirled it between her fingers, not meeting his eyes.
I feel like we're waiting for something to happen, she said quietly.
John picked up the menu again.
I know, but I think that's just how this feels.
From behind him, he heard the waitress approach for the third time.
We don't know yet, he said without looking up. Why am I even looking at this?
John set the menu back down and covered his face with his hands.
Can I join you?
John looked up. An unfamiliar, brown-haired young man slid into the booth next to Jessica and across from John.
Hey, Artie,
Jessica said with a weak smile.
Hey,
he said, glancing from her to John and back again. John said nothing.
Everyone okay?
Artie asked finally.
I heard there was some kind of accident. Where's Charlie?
Jessica looked down, tapping the fork on the table. John met the newcomer's eyes, then shook his head. Artie blanched, and John looked out the window. The parking lot outside blurred as he fixed his gaze on the smudged and streaky glass.
The last thing she said to me was...
John lightly touched his fist to the table.
Don't let go of me.
He turned back to the window.
John,
Jessica whispered.
And I did. I let go of her. And she died alone.
There was silence for a few moments.
I can't believe it,
Artie said, his brow furrowed.
We had just started dating, you know?
Jessica kept her face smooth, and John turned his thousand-yard stare on Artie. The boy faltered.
I mean, we were going to, I think. She really liked me anyway.
He looked to Jessica, who nodded.
She liked you, Artie, she said.
John turned back to the window.
I'm sure she did,
he said evenly. Random thoughts swirled through his mind. The mess of her room, the pang of concern when he saw her childhood toy, Theodore the stuffed rabbit, torn apart.
Charlie, what was wrong?
There was so much more he wanted to ask her. Those blind faces with their smooth, nearly featureless faces and their couplet word games. Something, everything, about them had disturbed him, and now that he pictured them again, he was bothered for another reason. They looked like William Afton's designs, the blank faces with no eyes.
Charlie, what made you think of that?
Jessica made an indistinct cry, and John startled back to the present to see her racing to the door, where Marla had appeared. He got up more slowly and followed her, with a sense of déjà vu. He was waiting his turn as Marla hugged Jessica close, stroking her hair and whispering something John couldn't hear. Marla released Jessica and turned to him.
John,
she said, taking both his hands. The sorrow in her eyes was what broke him. He leaned in and hugged her close, hiding his face in her hair until he could compose himself. When his breathing had steadied, she pushed him gently back and took his arm. They all went back to the table where Artie waited, peering uncertainly over the side of the booth. They sat down again. Marla slid in next to John and looked from him to Jessica.
You have to tell me what happened, she said quietly.
Jessica nodded, letting her hair fall over her face for a minute in a shiny brown curtain.
Yeah, I want to know too,
Artie piped up, and Marla glanced at him as if only just registering his presence.
Hi, she said, sounding slightly puzzled. I'm Marla.
Artie, Charlie and I were...
He glanced at John.
We were good friends.
Marla nodded.
Well, I wish we were meeting under different circumstances. Jessica? John? Please tell me.
They glanced at each other. John looked to the window again. He was content to let Jessica do the talking, but felt an obligation, not to talk to Marla, but to talk about Charlie.
Charlie was chasing something from her past, John said, his voice calm. She found it, and it didn't let her leave.
There was a building collapse, Jessica added. Her father's house.
Charlie didn't make it out, John said roughly.
He cleared his throat and reached for the glass of water in front of him. John vaguely heard Marla and Jessica exchanging words of comfort, but his mind was elsewhere. The woman, kneeling in the pool of Charlie's blood, holding her hand. He had only glimpsed her for a moment. She had looked almost as surprised to see him as he was to see her. But there was something familiar about her. He turned away from the others again and closed his eyes, trying to picture it. Dark hair, dark eyes. She looked severe and unafraid, even with the ground shaking and the building tumbling down over her head. I know her. The woman he remembered looked different, younger, but her face was the same. Suddenly he had it. The last day I saw you, Charlie, back when we were kids. She came to pick you up from school, and the next day you weren't there, and the next day, and the day after that. Then even us kids began to hear the rumors that your father had done what he did. And that's when I realized I would never see you again. John shivered.
John, what's wrong? Marla said sharply, then blushed. I mean, what are you thinking?
Her aunt was there, he said slowly. Her aunt Jen.
What? Marla said. Where? They hadn't spoken in months, Jessica said doubtfully.
I know, John said. But she was there. When I ran back, just before they pulled me away, I saw her. With Charlie.
The thought struck him like a blow across the chest, and he looked out the window again so that he wouldn't have to meet anyone's eyes.
Charlie's Aunt Jen was there, he repeated to the dirty pane of glass.
Maybe Clay called her, Jessica offered.
John didn't respond. No one spoke for a long moment.
I think it's best not to look for more mysteries, Marla said slowly. Charlie was... Are you all ready to order? The waitress asked brightly.
John turned to look at her with impatience in his eyes, but Marla cut him off.
Four coffees, she said firmly. Four eggs and toast, scrambled.
Thanks, Marla, John whispered. I'm not sure if I can eat, though.
She glanced at the rest of them. Artie looked briefly as if he wanted to say something. Then he cast his eyes down at the table. The woman departed, and Marla looked around.
We all have to eat, and you can't sit around in a diner all day without ordering anything.
I'm glad you're here, Marla, John said. She nodded.
We all love Charlie, she said, looking at each of them in turn. There's never a right thing to say, is there? Nothing ever makes it okay, because it's not. All those crazy experiments, Jessica said suddenly. I didn't understand, but she was so excited about them, and now she'll never get to finish. It's not fair, Marla said softly. So what do we do?
Jessica said with a plaintive note in her voice. She looked at Marla like she must have the answer.
Jessica, sweetie, Marla said. All anyone can do is hold on to the Charlie that we all loved.
It's over,
John said hoarsely, turning away from the window abruptly.
That psychopath murdered her, just like he did Michael and all those other kids. She was the most fascinating, the most amazing person I have ever known, and she died for nothing.
She did not die for nothing,
Marla snapped, leaning in toward him. Rage flashed in her eyes.
No one dies for nothing, John. Everyone's life has a meaning. Everyone has a death, and I hate it that this was hers. Do you hear me? I hate it. But we can't change it. All we can do is remember Charlie and honor Charlie's life from the beginning to the very end.
John held her stormy gaze for a long moment, then broke away and looked down at his folded hands on the table. She mirrored the movement and placed one hand over his. Jessica gasped, and he turned back to the table wearily.
What, Jessica?
John asked. Her nervous energy was beginning to exhaust him. She didn't answer, but gave him an incredulous look and turned back to the window. Marla leaned past John, craning her neck to see. Reluctantly, he looked too, letting his eyes focus for the first time on the parking lot outside the window and not the pane of glass itself. It was a car. The woman driving killed the engine and got out. She was slim and tall, with long, straight brown hair that glistened in the sun. She was wearing a bright red, knee-length dress with black combat boots, and she strode purposefully toward the diner. They all watched motionless, as if the slightest sound might rupture the illusion and send her away. The woman was almost at the door. Artie said it first.
Charlie?
Marla shook her head. She leaped up and turned, calling from the seat.
Charlie!
She ran for the door, and Jessica was quick on her heels, crying out after her. They rushed to the doorway to meet her just as she walked in. John stayed where he was, craning his neck to see the door. Artie seemed confused, his mouth open slightly and his brow furrowed. John watched for a steady moment, then turned away decisively, facing across the table with a grave expression. He didn't speak until Artie met his gaze.
That's not Charlie.
This is Suzanne Elise Freeman. We hope that you have enjoyed this production of Five Nights at Freddy's, Book 2, The Twisted Ones, by Scott Cawthon and Kira Breed Risley. This program was produced at Dion Audio and directed by Adam James Connor. Executive producer Paul R. Gagne. Print edition published by Scholastic Inc. Text copyright 2017 by Scott Cawthon. Production copyright 2017 by Scholastic Inc. All rights reserved. Look for other Five Nights at Freddy's titles from Scholastic Audio.